To Janie's strange eyes, everything in the Everglades was big and new. Big Lake Okeechobee, big beans, big cane, big weeds, big everything. Weeds that did well to grow waist high up the state were 8 and often 10 feet tall down there. Ground so rich that everything went wild. Volunteer cane just taking the place. Dirt roads so rich and black that a half mile of it would have fertilized a Kansas wheat field. Wild cane on either side of the road, hiding the rest of the world. People wild, too. Season don't open up till the last of September, but we had to get here ahead of time to get us a room, Teacake explained. 2 weeks from now, it'll be so many folks down here, they won't be looking for rooms. They'll be just looking for somewhere to sleep. Now we got a chance to get a room at the hotel where they got a bathtub. You can't live on the muck without you take a bath every day. Dude, that muck'll itch you like ants. Tain't but one place round here with a bathtub. Tain't nowhere near enough rooms. What we gonna do round here? All day I'm picking beans. All night I'm picking my box and rolling dice. Between the beans and the dice, I can't lose. I'm going right now to pick me up a job of work with the best man on the muck before the rest of them gets here. You can always get jobs around here in the season, but not with the right folks.
When does the job open up, Tea Cake? Everybody around here looks like they're waiting, too.
That's right. The big men have a certain time to open up the season just like in everything else. My boss man didn't get sufficient seed. He's out hunting up a few more bushels. Then we's going to planting.
Bushels?
Yeah, bushels. This ain't no game for pennies. Poor man ain't got no business at the show. The very next day, he burst into the room in high excitement. Boss done bought out another man and want me down on the lake. He got houses for the first ones that get there. Let's go. They rattled 9 miles in a borrowed car to the quarters that squatted so close that only the dike separated them from the great, sprawling Okeechobee. Janie fussed round the shack making a home while Tea Cake planted beans. After hours, they fished. Every now and then, they'd run across a party of Indians in their long, narrow dugouts, calmly winning their living in the trackless ways of the glades. Finally, the beans were in. Nothing much to do but wait to pick them. Tea Cake picked his box a great deal for Janie, but he still didn't have enough to do. No need of gambling yet. The people who were pouring in were broke. They didn't come bringing money. They were coming to make some. Tell you what, Janie, let's buy us some shooting tools and go hunting around here.
That would be fine, Tea Cake, except, you know, I can't shoot. But I'd love to go with you.
Oh, you needs to learn how. Ain't no need of you not knowing how to handle shooting tools. Even if you didn't ever find no game, it's always some trashy rascal that needs a good killing. He laughed. Let's go into Palm Beach and spend some of our money.
Every day they were practicing. Tea Cake made her shoot at little things just to give her good aim. Pistol and shotgun and rifle. It got so the others stood around and watched them.
Some of the men would beg for a shot at the target themselves. It was the most exciting thing on the muck, better than the juke and the pool room, unless some special band was playing for a dance. And the thing that got everybody was the way Janie caught on. She got to the place. She could shoot a hawk out of a pine tree and not tear him up, shoot his head off. She got to be a better shot than Tea Cake. They'd go out any late afternoon and come back loaded down with game. One night, they got a boat and went out hunting alligators, shining their phosphorescent eyes and shooting them in the dark. They could sell the hides and teeth in Palm Beach, besides having fun together till work got pressing. Day by day now, the hordes of workers poured in. Some came limping in with their shoes and sore feet from walking. It's hard trying to follow your shoe instead of your shoe following you. They came in wagons from way up in Georgia, and they came in truckloads from east, west, north, and south.
permanent transients with no attachments, and tired-looking men with their families and dogs and flivvers. All night, all day, hurrying to pick beans. Skillets, beds, patched-up spare inner tubes, all hanging and dangling from the ancient cars on the outside, and hopeful humanity herded and hovered on the inside, chugging onto the muck. People ugly from ignorance and broken from being poor. All night now, the jukes clanged and clamored, pianos living three lifetimes in one, blues made and used right on the spot, dancing, fighting, singing, crying, laughing, winning and losing love every hour, work all day for money, fight all night for love, the rich black earth clinging to bodies and biting the skin like ants. Finally, no more sleeping places. Men made big fires, and 50 or 60 men slept around each fire, but they had to pay the man whose land he slept on. He ran the fire just like his boarding place for pay, but nobody cared. They made good money, even to the children, so they spent good money. Next month and next year were other times. No need to mix them up with the present. Tea Cake's house was a magnet, the unauthorized center of the job. The way he would sit in the doorway and play his guitar made people stop and listen, and maybe disappoint the juke for that night. He was always laughing and full of fun, too. He kept everybody laughing in the bean field. Janie stayed home and boiled big pots of black-eyed peas and rice, sometimes baked big pans of navy beans with plenty of sugar and hunks of bacon laying on top. That was something Tea Cake loved. So no matter if Janie had fixed beans two or three times during the week, they had baked beans again on Sunday. She always had some kind of dessert, too, as Tea Cake said it gave a man something to taper off on. Sometimes she'd straighten out the two-room house and take the rifle and have fried rabbit for supper when Tea Cake got home. She didn't leave him itching and scratching in his work clothes, either. The kettle of hot water was already waiting when he got in. Then Tea Cake took to popping into the kitchen door at odd hours, between breakfast and dinner sometimes. Then often around 2 o'clock he'd come home and tease and wrestle with her for a half an hour and slip on back to work. So one day she asked him about it. "Tea Cake, what you doing back in the quarters when everybody else is still working?" "Come to see about you. The boogerman liable to tote you off whilst I'm gone. 'Tain't no boogerman got me to study about. Maybe you think I ain't treating you right and you watching me." No, Janie, I know better than that. But since you got that in your head, I'll have to tell you the real truth so you can know. Janie, I gets lonesome out there all day without you. After this, you better come get a job or work out there like the rest of the women so I won't be losing time coming home." "TK, you's a mess. Can't do without me that little time." "Ain't no little time. It's near about all day." So the very next morning, Janie got ready to pick beans along with Tea Cake. There was a suppressed murmur when she picked up a basket and went to work. She was already getting to be a special case on the muck. It was generally assumed that she thought herself too good to work like the rest of the women, and that Tea Cake pumped her up to that. But all day long, the romping and playing they carried on behind the boss's back made her popular right away. It got the whole field to playing off and on. Then Tea Cake would help get supper afterwards. "You don't think I'm trying to get out of taking care of you, do you, Janie? 'Cause I asked you to work alongside of me?" Tea Cake asked her at the end of her first week in the field. "Oh, no, honey. I likes it. It's more nicer than sitting around these quarters all day." Clerking in that store was hard. "But here, we ain't got nothing to do but our work and come home and love." The house was full of people every night. That is, all around the doorstep was full. Some were there to hear Tea Cake pick the box. Some came to talk and tell stories. But most of them came to get into whatever game was going on or might go on. Sometimes Tea Cake lost heavily, for there were several good gamblers on the lake. Sometimes he won and made Janie proud of his skill. But outside of the two jukes, everything on that job went on around those two. Sometimes Janie would think of the old days in the big white house and the store and laugh to herself. What if Eatonville could see her now in her blue denim overalls and heavy shoes, the crowd of people around her and a dice game on her floor? She was sorry for her friends back there and scornful of the others. The men held big arguments here like they used to do on the store porch. Only here she could listen and laugh and even talk some herself if she wanted to. She got so she could tell big stories herself from listening to the rest. Because she loved to hear it, and the men loved to hear themselves, they would woof and boogaboo around the games to the limit. No matter how rough it was, people seldom got mad because everything was done for a laugh. Everybody loved to hear Ed Dockery, Bootney, and Sopty Bottom in a skin game. Ed Dockery was dealing one night, and he looked over at Sopty Bottom's card, and he could tell Sop thought he was going to win. He hollered, "I'll break up that setting eggs." Sop looked and said, "Root the pig." Bootney asked, "What are you going to do? Do, do." Everybody was watching that next card fall. It got ready to turn. "I'm going to sweep out hell and burn up the broom." He slammed down another dollar. "Don't oversport yourself, Ed," Bootney challenged. "You're getting too yellow." Ed caught hold of the corner of the card. Sop dropped a dollar. "I'm going to shoot in the hearse. Don't care how sad the funeral be." Ed said, "You see how this man is teasing hell." Tea Cake nudged Sop not to bet. "You're going to get caught in a bullet storm if you don't watch out." Sop said, "Oh, tain't nothing to that bear but his curly hair. I can look through muddy water and see dry land." Ed turned off the card and hollered, "Zachariah, I said, come down out that sycamore tree. You can't do no business." Nobody fell on that card. Everybody was scared of the next one. Ed looked around and saw Gabe standing behind his chair and hollered, "Move over me, Gabe. You're too black. You draw heat. Sop, you want to pick up that bet whilst you got a chance?" "No, man. I wish I had 1,000 leg to put on it." "So you won't listen, huh? Dumb niggas in free schools. I'm going to take and teach you. I'll mainline, but I won't sidetrack." Ed flipped the next card, and Sop fell and lost. Everybody hollered and laughed. Ed laughed and said, "Get off the muck. You ain't nothing, that's all. Hot boiling water won't help you none." Ed kept on laughing because he had been so scared before. "Sop, Bootney, all y'all to let me win your money. I'm sending it straight off to Sears and Roebuck and buy me some clothes. And when I turn out Christmas Day, it would take a doctor to tell me how near I is dressed to death." Janie learned what it felt like to be jealous. A little chunky girl took to picking a play out of Tea Cake in the fields and in the quarters. If he said anything at all, she'd take the opposite side and hit him or shove him and run away to make him chase her. Janie knew what she was up to, luring him away from the crowd. It kept up for 2 or 3 weeks, with Nunky getting bolder all the time. She'd hit Tea Cake playfully, and the minute he so much as tapped her with his finger, she'd fall against him or fall on the ground and have to be picked up. She'd be almost helpless. It took a great deal of handling to set her on her feet again. And another thing, Tea Cake didn't seem to be able to fend her off as promptly as Janie thought he ought to. She began to be snappish a little. A little seed of fear was growing into a tree. Maybe someday Tea Cake would weaken. Maybe he had already given secret encouragement, and this was Nunky's way of bragging about it. Other people began to notice, too, and that put Janie more on a wonder. One day, they were working near where the beans ended and the sugar cane began. Janie had marched off a little from Tea Cake's side with another woman for a chat. When she glanced around, Tea Cake was gone. Nunky, too. She knew because she looked. "Where's Tea Cake?" she asked Sopty Bottom. He waved his hand towards the cane field and hurried away. Janie never thought at all. She just acted on feelings. She rushed into the cane, and about the fifth row down, she found Tea Cake and Nunky struggling. She was on them before either knew. "What's the matter here?" Janie asked in a cold rage. They sprang apart. "Nothing," Tea Cake told her, standing shamefaced. "Well, what you doing in here? How come you ain't out there with the rest?" "She grabbed my working tickets out of my shirt pocket, and I run to get them back," Tea Cake explained, showing the tickets, considerably mauled about in the struggle. Janie made a move to seize Nunky, but the girl fled, so she took out behind her over the humped-up cane rose. But Nunky did not mean to be caught, so Janie went on home. The sight of the fields and the other happy people was too much for her that day. She walked slowly and thoughtfully to the quarters. It wasn't long before Tea Cake found her there and tried to talk. She cut him short with a blow, and they fought from one room to the other. Janie trying to beat him, and Tea Cake kept holding her wrists and wherever he could to keep her from going too far. "I believe you've been messing around her," she panted furiously. "No such a thing," Tea Cake retorted. "I believe you did. Don't care how big a lie get told. Somebody can believe it." They fought on. "You done hurt my heart. Now you come with a lie to bruise my ears. Turn go my hands." Janie seethed, but Tea Cake never let go. They wrestled on until they were doped with their own fumes and emanations, till their clothes had been torn away, till he hurled her to the floor and held her there, melting her resistance with the heat of his body, doing things with their bodies to express the inexpressible. Kissed her until she arched her body to meet him, and they fell asleep in sweet exhaustion. The next morning, Janie asked like a woman, "You still love old Nunky?" "No, never did, and you know it, too. I didn't want her." "Yeah, you did." She didn't say this because she believed it. She wanted to hear his denial. She had to crow over the fallen Nunky. "What would I do with that little chunk of woman with you around? She ain't good for nothing except to set up in the corner by the kitchen stove and break wood over her head. Use something to make a man forget to get old and forget to die." The season closed, and people went away like they had come, in droves. Tea Cake and Janie had decided to stay, since they wanted to make another season on the muck. There was nothing to do after they had gathered several bushels of dried beans to save over and sell to the planters in the fall. So Janie began to look around and see people and things she hadn't noticed during the season. For instance, during the summer, when she heard the subtle but compelling rhythms of the Bahamian drummers, she'd walk over and watch the dances. She did not laugh the saws to scorn, as she had heard the people doing in the season. She got to like it a lot, and she and Tea Cake were on hand every night till the others teased them about it. Janie came to know Mrs. Turner now. She had seen her several times during the season, but neither ever spoke. Now they got to be visiting friends. Mrs. Turner was a milky sort of a woman that belonged to childbed. Her shoulders rounded a little, and she must have been conscious of her pelvis because she kept it stuck out in front of her so she could always see it. Tea Cake made a lot of fun about Mrs. Turner's shape behind her back. He claimed that she had been shaped up by a cow kicking her from behind. She was an ironing board with things thrown at it. Then that same cow took and stepped in her mouth when she was a baby and left it wide and flat with her chin and nose almost meeting. But Mrs. Turner's shape and features were entirely approved by Mrs. Turner. Her nose was slightly pointed, and she was proud. Her thin lips were an ever delight to her eyes. Even her buttocks in bas-relief were a source of pride. To her way of thinking, all these things set her aside from Negroes. That was why she sought out Janie to friend with. Janie's coffee and cream complexion and her luxurious hair made Mrs. Turner forgive her for wearing overalls like the other women who worked in the fields. She didn't forgive her for marrying a man as dark as tea cake, but she felt that she could remedy that. That was what her brother was born for. She seldom stayed long when she found tea cake at home. But when she happened to drop in and catch Janie alone, she'd spend hours chatting away. Her disfavorite subject was Negroes. "Miss Woods, I have often said to my husband, I don't see how a lady like Miss Woods can stand all them common niggers around her place all the time." "They don't worry me at all, Miss Turner. Fact about the thing is, they tickles me with their talk. I mean, you got more nerve than me. When somebody talked my husband into coming down here to open up an eating place, I never dreamt so many different kinds of black folks could collect in one place. Did I never would have come. I ain't used to associating with black folks. My son claims they draws lightning." They laughed a little, and after many of these talks, Mrs. Turner said, "Your husband must have had plenty of money when y'all got married." "What make you think that, Miss Turner? To get hold of a woman like you, you got more nerve than me. I just couldn't see myself married to no black man. Too many black folks already. We ought to lighten up the race." "No, my husband didn't have nothing but himself. He's easy to love if you mess around him. I loves him." "Why, you, Miss Woods, I don't believe it. You just sort of hypnotized, that's all." "No, it's real. I couldn't stand it if he was to quit me. Don't know what I'd do. He can take most any little thing and make summertime out of it when times is dull. Then we lives off of that happiness he made till some more happiness come along." "Well, you're different from me. I can't stand black niggas. I don't blame the white folks from hating them, because I can't stand them myself. Another thing, I hates to see folks like me and you mixed up with them. Us all to class off. Us can't do it. We's a mango people, and all us got black kin folks as well as yaller kin folks. How come you're so against black? And it makes me tired. Always laughing. They laugh too much and they laugh too loud. Always singing old nigger songs. Always cutting the monkey for white folks. If it wasn't for so many black folks, it wouldn't be no race problem. The white folks would take us in with them. The black ones is holding us back." "You reckon?" "'Course, I never thought about it too much, but I don't figure they're even going to want us for company. We's too poor." "'Tain't the poorness. It's the color and the features. Who want any little old black baby laying up in the baby buggy looking like a fly in buttermilk? Who wants to be mixed up with a rusty black man and a black woman going down the street in all them loud colors and whooping and hollering and laughing over nothing? I don't know. Don't bring me no nigger doctor to hang over my sick bed. I done had 6 children. Wasn't lucky enough to raise but that one, and ain't never had a nigger to even feel my pulse. White doctor always gets my money. I don't go in no nigger store to buy nothing, neither. Colored folks don't know nothing about no business. Deliver me." Mrs. Turner was almost screaming in fanatical earnestness by now. Janie was dumb and bewildered before, and she clucked sympathetically and wished she knew what to say. It was so evident that Mrs. Turner took black folk as a personal affront to herself. "Look at me. I ain't got no flat nose and liver lips. I'm a featured woman. I got white folks' features in my face. Still and all, I got to be lumped in with all the rest. It ain't fair. Even if they don't take us in with the whites, they ought to make us a class to ourselves." "It don't worry me at all, but I reckon I ain't got no real head for thinking. You ought to meet my brother. He's real smart. Got dead straight hair. They made him a delegate to the Sunday school convention, and he read a paper on Booker T. Washington and tore him to pieces. Booker T.? He was a great big man, wasn't he? Supposed to be. All he ever done was cut the monkey for white folks, so they pumped him up. But you know what the old folks say. The higher the monkey climbs, the more he shows his behind. So that's the way it was with Booker T. My brother hit him every time they give him a chance to speak. I was raised on the notion that he was a great big man, was all that Janie knew to say. He didn't do nothing but hold us back, talking about work, when the race ain't never done nothing else. He was an enemy to us, that's what. He was a white folks nigger. According to all Janie had been taught, this was sacrilege, so she sat without speaking at all. But Mrs. Turner went on. I done sent for my brother to come down and spend a while with us. He's sort of out of work now. I want you to meet him more special. You and him would make up a swell couple if you wasn't already married. He's a fine carpenter when he can get anything to do. Yeah, maybe so, but I's married now, so 'tain't no use in considering. Mrs. Turner finally rose to go after being very firm about several other viewpoints of either herself, her son, or her brother. She begged Janie to drop in on her any time, but never once mentioning tea cake. Finally, she was gone, and Janie hurried to a kitchen to put on supper and found tea cake sitting in there with his head between his hands. Tea cake, I didn't know you was home. I know you didn't. I've been here a long time, listening to that heifer run me down to the dogs and try to tow you off from me. So that was she was up to? I didn't know. Of course she is. She got some no-count brothers she wants you to hook up with and take care of, I reckon. Shucks, if that's her notion, she's barking up the wrong tree. My hands is full already. Thank you, ma'am. I hate that woman like poison. Keep her from around this house. Her look like a white woman with that miry skin and hair just as close to her head as 99 is to 100. Since she hate black folks, so she don't need our money in her old eating place. I'll pass the word along. We can go to that white man's place and get good treatment. Her and that whittle-down husband of hers. And that son, he's just a dirty trick her womb played on her. I'm telling her husband to keep her home. I don't want her around his house. One day, Tea Cake met Turner and his son on the street. He was a vanishing-looking kind of a man, as if there used to be parts about him that stuck out individually, but now he hadn't a thing about him that wasn't dwindled and blurred. Just like he had been sandpapered down to a long oval mass. D.K. felt sorry for him without knowing why, so he didn't blurt out the insults he had intended, but he couldn't hold in everything. They talked about the prospects for the coming season for a moment. Then T-Cake said, "Your wife don't seem to have nothing much to do, so she can visit a lot. Mine got too much to do to go visiting and too much to spend time talking to folks that visit her. My wife takes time for whatever she wants to do. Real strong-headed that way, yes, indeed." He laughed a high, lungless laugh. "The chillin' don't keep her in no more, so she visits when she chooses." "The chillin'?" Tea Cake asked in surprise. "You got any smaller than him?" He indicated the son, who seemed around 20 or so. "I ain't seen your others." "I reckon you ain't, 'cause days all passed on before this one was born. We ain't had no luck at all with our chillin'. We lucky to raise him. He's the last stroke of exhausted nature." He gave his powerless laugh again, and Tea Cake and the boy joined in with him. Then Tea Cake walked on off and went home to Janie. "Her husband can't do nothing with that butt-headed woman. All you can do is treat her cold whenever she come around here. Janie tried that, but short of telling Mrs. Turner bluntly, there was nothing she could do to discourage her completely. She felt honored by Janie's acquaintance, and she quickly forgave and forgot snubs in order to keep it. Anyone who looked more white-focused than herself was better than she was in her criteria. Therefore, it was right that they should be cruel to her at times, just as she was cruel to those more Negroid than herself in direct ratio to their Negroness. Like the pecking order in a chicken yard, insensate cruelty to those you can whip and groveling submission to those you can't. Once having set up her idols and built altars to them, it was inevitable that she would worship there. It was inevitable that she should accept any inconsistency and cruelty from her deity, as all good worshippers do from theirs. All gods who receive homage are cruel. All gods dispense suffering without reason. Otherwise, they would not be worshipped. Through indiscriminate suffering, men know fear, and fear is the most divine emotion. It is the stones for altars and the beginning of wisdom. Half-gods are worshipped in wine and flowers. Real gods require blood. Mrs. Turner, like all other believers, had built an altar to the unattainable, Caucasian characteristics for all. Her god would smite her, would hurl her from pinnacles and lose her in deserts, but she would not forsake his altars. Behind her crude words was a belief that somehow she and others, through worship, could attain her paradise, a heaven of straight-haired, thin-lipped, high-nose-boned, white seraphs. The physical impossibilities in no way injured faith. That was the mystery, and mysteries are the chores of gods. Beyond her faith was a fanaticism to defend the altars of her god. It was distressing to emerge from her inner temple and find these black desecrators howling with laughter before the door. Oh, for an army, terrible with banners and swords. So she didn't cling to Janie Woods, the woman. She paid homage to Janie's Caucasian characteristics as such. And when she was with Janie, she had a feeling of transmutation, as if she herself had become whiter and with straighter hair. And she hated Tea Cake first for his defilement of divinity, and next for his telling mockery of her. If she only knew something she could do about it. But she didn't. Once she was complaining about the carryings-on at the Duke, and Tea Cake snapped, "Oh, don't make God look so foolish, finding fault with everything he made." So Mrs. Turner frowned most of the time. She had so much to disapprove of. It didn't affect Tea Cake and Janie too much. It just gave them something to talk about in the summertime when everything was dull on the muck. Otherwise, they made little trips to Palm Beach, Fort Myers, and Fort Lauderdale for their fun. Before they realized it, the sun was cooler, and the crowds came pouring onto the muck again. A great deal of the old crowd were back, but there were lots of new ones, too. Some of these men made passes at Janie, and women who didn't know took out after Tea Cake. Didn't take them long to be put right, however. Still and all, jealousies arose now and then on both sides. When Mrs. Turner's brother came and she brought him over to be introduced, Tea Cake had a brainstorm. Before the week was over, he had whipped Janie. Not because her behavior justified his jealousy, but it relieved that awful fear inside of him. Being able to whip her reassured him in possession. No brutal beating at all. He just slapped her around a bit to show he was boss. Everybody talked about it next day in the fields. It aroused a sort of envy in both men and women. The way he petted and pampered her, as if those two or three face slaps had nearly killed her, made the women see visions, and the helpless way she hung on him made men dream dreams.
"Tea Cake, you sure is a lucky man,"
Sopty Bottom told him.
"A person can see every place you hit her. I bet she'd never raise her hand to hit you back, neither." take some of these old rusty black women, and they would fight you all night long, and next day nobody couldn't tell you ever hit them. That's the reason I quit hitting my woman. You can't make no mark on them at all. Lord, wouldn't I love to whip a tender woman like Janie? I bet she don't even holler. She just cries, eh, TK?
That's right.
See that? My woman would spread her lungs all over Palm Beach County, let alone knock out my jaw teeth. You don't know that woman of mine. She got 99 rows of jaw teeth, and get her good mad, she'll wade through solid rock up to her hip pockets.
My Janie is a high-time woman and used to things. I didn't get her out of the middle of the road. I got her out of a big fine house. Right now, she got money enough in the bank to buy up these zigaboos and give them away.
Hush your mouth! And she down here on the muck like anybody else.
Janie is wherever I wants to be. That's the kind of wife she is, and I love her for it. I wouldn't be knocking her around. I didn't want to whoop her last night, but old Miss Turner done sent for her brother to come to bait Janie in and take her away from me. I didn't whoop Janie because she done nothing. I beat her to show them Turners who is boss. I sat in the kitchen one day and heard that woman tell my wife I'm too black for her. She don't see how Janie can stand me.
But tell her husband on her.
Shucks, I believe he's scared of her.
Knock her teeth down her throat.
That would look like she had some influence when she ain't. I just let her see that I got control.
So she live off our money and don't like black folks, huh? Okay, we'll have her gone from here before 2 weeks is up. I'm going right off to all the men and drop rocks against her.
I ain't mad with her for what she done, because she ain't done me nothing yet. I'm mad at her for thinking. Her and her gang got to go.
Us is Widget Tea Cake. You know that already. That Turner woman is real smart, according to her notions. Reckon she done heard about that money your wife got in the bank, and she's bound to rope her into her family one way or another.
Sop, I don't think it's half the money as it is the looks. She's color-struck. She ain't got the kind of mind you meet every day. She ain't a fact, and neither do she make a good story when you tell about her.
She's too smart to stay around here. She figures we's just a bunch of dumb niggas, so she thinks she'll grow horns. But that's a lie. She'll die butt-headed.
Saturday afternoon, when the work tickets were turned into cash, everybody began to buy coon dick and get drunk. By dusk dark, Belle Glade was full of loud-talking, staggering men. Plenty of women had gotten their knots charged, too. The police chief in his speedy Ford was rushing from juke to juke and eating house, trying to keep order, but making few arrests. Not enough jail space for all the drunks, so why bother with a few? All he could do to keep down fights and get the white man out of Color Town by 9 o'clock. Dick Sterrett and Cootie May seemed to be the worst off. Their liquor told them to go from place to place, pushing and shoving and loud-talking, and they were doing it. Way after a while, they arrived at Mrs. Turner's eating house and found the place full to the limit. Tea cakes, stew beef, sopty bottom, bootney, motorboat, and all the familiar crowd was there. Cootie May straightened up as if in surprise and asked,
"So what y'all doing in here?"
"Eating," stew beef told him. "They got beef stew, so you know I'd be here."
"We all like to take a rest from our women folks' cooking once in a while. So us all eating away from home tonight. Anyhow, Miss Turner got the best old grub in town."
Mrs. Turner, back and forth in the dining room, heard Sop when he said this and beamed.
"I expect you two last ones to come in is going to have to wait for a seat. I'm all full up now." "That's all right," Sterrett objected. "You fry me some fish, I can eat standing up. Cup of coffee on the side."
"Sling me up a plate of that stew beef with some coffee too, please, ma'am. Sterrett is just as drunk as I is, and if he can eat standing up, I can do the same." Pretty soon, the girls that was waiting table for Mrs. Turner brought in the order, and Sterrett took his fish and coffee in his hands and stood there. Kudeme wouldn't take his off the tray like he should have. "Now, you hold it for me, baby, and let me eat," he told the waitress. He took the fork and started to eat off the tray.
"Nobody ain't got no time to hold your grub up in front of your face," she told Kudeme. "Yeah, take it yourself."
"You's right," Kudeme told her. "Gimme it here. Sopkin, gimme his cheer."
"You's a lie," Sop retorted. "I ain't through, and I ain't ready to get up."
Kudeme tried to shove Sop out of the chair, and Sop resisted. That brought on a whole lot of shoving and scrambling, and coffee got spilt on Sop. So he aimed at Kudeme with a saucer and hit Bootney. Bootney threw his thick coffee cup at Kudeme and just missed Stew Beef, so it got to be a big fight. Mrs. Turner came running in out of the kitchen. Then Tea Cake got up and caught hold of Kudeme by the collar. "Look here, y'all don't come in here and raise no disturbance in the place. Miss Turner is too nice a woman for that. In fact, she's more nicer than anybody else on the muck." Mrs. Turner beamed on TK.
"I knows that. All of us knows it. But I don't give a damn how nice she is. I got to have some place to sit down and eat. Sop ain't gonna bluff me neither. Let him fight like a man. Take your hands off me, TK."
"No, I won't, neither. You coming on out of the place."
"Who's going to make me come out?"
"Me, that's who. I'm in here, ain't I? If you don't want to respect nice people like Mrs. Turner, God knows you're going to respect me. Come on out of here, Kudeme."
"Turn him loose, Tea Cake," Sterrett shouted. "That's my buddy. Us coming here together, and he ain't going nowhere until I go myself."
"Well, both of you is going," Tea Cake shouted and fastened down on Kudeme. Dockery grabbed Sterrett, and they razzled all over the place. Some more joined in, and dishes and tables began to crash. Mrs. Turner saw with dismay that Tea Cake's taking them out was worse than letting them stay in. She ran out in the back somewhere and got her husband to put a stop to things. He came in, took a look, and squinched down into a chair in an off corner and didn't open his mouth. So Mrs. Turner struggled into the mass and caught Tea Cake by the arm.
"That's all right, Tea Cake. I appreciate your help, but leave him alone."
"No, sir, Miss Turner. I'm going to show them they can't come running over nice people and loud talk no place whilst I'm around. They going out of here."
By that time, everybody in and around the place was taking sides. Somehow or other, Mrs. Turner fell down, and nobody knew she was down there under all the fighting and broken dishes and crippled up tables and broken off chair legs and window panes and such things. It got so that the floor was knee deep with something no matter where you put your foot down. But Tea Cake kept right on until Kudeme told him,
"I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Y'all tried to tell me right, and I wouldn't listen. I ain't mad with nobody. Just to show y'all I ain't mad, me and Sterrett gonna buy everybody something to drink. Old man Vickers, I got some good goondick over around Perky. Come on, everybody, let's go get our knots charged."
Everybody got in a good humor and left. Mrs. Turner got up off the floor, hollering for the police. "Look at her place. How come nobody didn't call the police?" Then she found out that one of her hands was all stepped on and her fingers were bleeding pretty pert. Two or three people who were not there during the fracas poked their heads in at the door to sympathize, but that made Mrs. Turner madder. She told them where to go in a hurry. Then she saw her husband sitting over there in a corner with his long, bony legs all crossed up, smoking his pipe.
"What kind of man is you, Turner? You say these no-count niggers coming in and break up my place? How can you sit and see your wife all trampled on? You ain't no kind of man at all. You seen that Tea Cake shove me down? Yes, you did. You ain't raised your hand to do nothing about it."
Turner removed his pipe and answered,
"Yeah, and you see how I did swell up, too, didn't you? You tell Tea Cake he better be careful I don't swell up again."
At that, Turner crossed his legs the other way and kept right on smoking his pipe. Mrs. Turner hit at him the best she could with her hurt hand and then spoke her mind for half an hour.
It's a good thing my brother wasn't around here when it happened. Knew he would have killed somebody. My son, too. They got some manhood about them. We's going back to Miami, where folks is civilized.
Nobody told her right away that her son and brother were already on their way after pointed warnings outside the cafe. No time for fooling around. They were hurrying into Palm Beach. She'd find out about that later on. Monday morning, Kudame and Sterrett stopped by and begged her pardon profusely and gave her $5 apiece. Then Kudame said,
"They tell me I was drunk Saturday night and clowning down. I don't remember a thing about it, but when I get to peeping through my liquor, they tell me I'm a mess."